Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/Brady Bros and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's literally that easy. Just go to audibletrial.com/Brady Bros. Hello and welcome back to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and alongside me, my brother Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Today is Monday, February 17th, and we are kicking it off with episode 46 here. James, give me some intro music.
No icing. For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
And we will start off today's show with the Boston Red Sox. And stuff's actually happening. Baseball's getting kind of somewhat close to being a thing. So today was the first day of full squad workouts and spring training. We got to see all of our favorite still Red Sox out there on the field today. Chris Sale was on the mound for a bit. We saw Benny hitting some bombs in BP. What are your thoughts on spring training kind of getting underway here?
All right, so excited for baseball to be back, because that's like, I love watching sports, obviously, and like baseball is so consistent that I know like every night I have something like to watch, as opposed to right now where I'm waiting like the 2 day gaps, or in this case like 3 day gaps with the Celtics off, for like Bruins to be on or Celtics to be on, something to watch. Baseball, super great that it's almost back, so we can just have something to watch every night. I haven't really kept up with a whole lot of spring training stuff. Obviously, just really kicked off today with the full squad workouts. The pitchers and catchers have been there for a while, so we got first look at a couple of the new assets in that department, such as the catcher we acquired in the Mookie Betts trade, and then some of the pitchers. Martin Perez is one that comes to mind. We saw him a bit on the mound in the past week, but I'm kind of thinking of like boycotting spring training until they sign Brock Holt. Like, I don't want to know what's going on until he's on the team, which is super selfish and stupid, but I just really want him to sign him.
Well, we can get into that a little bit. So, like you mentioned, Brock Holt's still not with any team at this point.
And, like, we haven't even heard anything, which I find odd. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it also just means he hasn't signed with another team, though, which I guess is equally as good for our cause of we're both very much on the same page of wanting Brock Holt back. And the saga of what's going on with Brock Holt kind of continues. That whole episode kind of almost came to a screeching halt midweek when the Red Sox assigned the new Alex Verdugo, acquired in the Mookie Betts trade, the number 12. But then days later, he changed his number to 99. So there's hope for a Brock comeback still, to throw an actual number at you. The Sox roughly have about $12 million left to play with in cap space, which is plenty enough to sign Brock to like a 2-year deal, which is, I think, what was rumored he was looking at with other teams, was a roughly like a $10 or $12 million deal. And if you have this cap space left, I say, yeah, like you have to go for it. If they're clearly paying attention to what the media is saying, to what the fans are saying, if the whole Mookie Betts trade hit a hold up, and we can that whole basically them,
I mean, we covered that, them, yeah, I get what you're saying. Guess. They are like, there is some sort of, they are listening to some extent. How much of that is still kind of to be determined. They still have to do like what's best for the overall organization and a bunch of logistical stuff that we can't even fathom and all that. But yeah, you're 100% right. They have plenty of, I don't want to say plenty, they have enough money to sign him. It's just they got to hopefully strike a deal and hope that he wants to come back here. And I can't see why he wouldn't.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where a lot of these guys that were on that, 2018 team that looked like it was just so much fun for everyone, a lot of them really looks like and sounds like they do enjoy playing in Boston. At the same time, it is a business. You got to do what's best for you financially too, but we can kind of get out of that. So just hopefully Brock Holt come back. That's all we're saying.
Yeah. But we James can... has this all listed perfectly in like what order we're supposed to go in, and I literally jumped to like halfway down the list of the things that we're supposed to talk about because I wanted to talk about Brock Holt first.
Yeah.
So we can backtrack to spring training a little bit, and we've gotten some looks at Chris Sale, who's battled with, as we know, some injuries over the past couple of years. And you have here that he says he feels the best he's felt in a long time, which is very reassuring, but I also am not going to believe it till I see it type of thing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one of those things where it's, you know, you've talked the talk, now walk the walk. And Chris Sale, so the Red Sox have done this a lot, and I know they've done it, you know, last season too. Well, they'll live stream on Twitter, they'll live stream like press conferences and stuff. And so this came from a live stream of a Chris Sale press conference that I was watching on Twitter. And he basically just said, he's never really taken this much time off of baseball that he has, you know, last season where he stopped traveling with the team to just do rehab and get better. So he said his whole arm's feeling better, his shoulder, his elbow, his arm, his wrist, everything just feels a lot better, refreshed, ready to go. And I do agree with you. He can say that, and now I just want to see...
Like, is he going to make it through 160, obviously not all 162 games, but is he going to make it through the whole season without any major hangups type of thing?
Yeah, and that's what we can hope for. Is, you know, sometimes that's just what it takes, is it takes some time off to sit back, because baseball, especially for pitchers, is a very demanding sport. If you're going out there once every couple of days with the rotation we have and throwing, you know, 80, 90, 100 pitches where you're cranking at 90 plus miles an hour. I don't know what that does to an arm, but I can't imagine it's great. But like you said, Chris Sale, hopefully he comes back nice and strong. It's kind of questioned whether he's going to be completely ready for the beginning of the season, but I know that when he comes back, he definitely talked about he's ready to be back. And I think that's when Chris Sale pitches his best, is when he's got something to prove and he's fed up. And I think you've got a little bit of both. So I'm looking for a hot start out of Chris Sale.
Yeah, it was odd. I think he was like unsure whether he'd be ready to go for the start of the season, but the cause was pneumonia.
Yeah, it was
is that
weird.
What you saw?
So yeah.
Which doesn't make sense. Was... Like, pneumonia is obviously worse than like you're like, oh, I've got a cold. Like, pneumonia is much worse than that. But it seems like with the medical staff they have, and if they manage it properly with the proper medication, like, that shouldn't be a month and a half thing.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I didn't read into it too much. I just saw this was a big headline that was talked about. It was Chris Sale is sick but is fully healthy, was a big thing last week, basically saying that he was sick with pneumonia but his arm was fully healthy. But it was just one of the most poorly written headlines I've seen in a while. But yeah, I didn't read into it too much.
Pitcher spends months rehabbing only to be knocked out of the season again by a cold.
Yeah, whatever it ends up being. The idea I have is, I mean, if you have pneumonia, you're probably not supposed to be training or pitching or anything, so that might set you back a little bit in the rehab, getting back into the process, whatever. But we can move on from this, from Chris Sale. We will bounce over to the other half of these things that have been live streamed on Twitter. And I don't know if you've been keeping up with these.
I not sure as much have, as I like want to.
Because it is a whole
The Astros
lot.
Are terrible. That's just... The Astros, it's getting ridiculous.
It's horrible.
They had
it's
the press
so
conference a couple weeks ago that was like... basically saying, yes, we cheated, like... not admitting to the full extent of what we're pretty sure they did, but for what they were found guilty of, I guess, by the investigation, they were like, yes, we did it, but it didn't help that much. Like, we feel bad, but it really didn't help at all, and stuff like that. And now people are just, it seems to me like they're all trying to do damage control, but they aren't on the same page. Does that make sense?
Oh, for sure. I saw this, and I'm going to reference this. This was a tweet from Jared Carabas, who's a big baseball writer, particularly.
Probably the best unbiased baseball writer on...
National baseball writer, for sure.
Yeah, probably.
And anyways, so he was saying that I hope, like, you know, PR classes take a look at this and just use this as an example of what not to do for years to come, because the Astros have handled this whole situation so poorly. So this is a Boston podcast. We won't get super into this, I hope. It's very easy with this whole scandal to go down the rabbit hole a little bit, but just because this is such a big baseball news, and then I have one other question after this kind of that we'll break down and then hopefully wrap up baseball. But okay, to the extent of it, the owner of the Astros, this is one of my biggest things that I have trouble with. The owner of the Astros in a press conference was asked basically, you know, do you think you guys shouldn't have the title? Which is a tough question to ask. Like, you're going to ask any player, oh, do you think you don't deserve what you have? And they're going to say no. And this guy's response was, well, we as a team don't believe it impacted the game. And then like 20 seconds later in a question goes, oh, but for sure, like what we did helped us win games. It's just the dumbest, like,
yeah, you says need to, one you thing, then says another. And stick to it, even if it is like another lie. And then you have, we'll keep going a little bit here, the whole buzzer thing, which was never proved. We talked about this, I want to say a couple weeks ago. It might have been more like a month or two ago,
when everything started crumbling.
Literally, it's called like MLB Meltdown or something, if you want to go listen to the first whatever. But the buzzers were never actually proved. But I want to say like Carlos Carrera almost basically confirmed it, right?
Yeah, it's wild.
So the thing was Altuve was asked why he didn't take his shirt off, or want his teammates to rip his shirt off. And first the story was, oh, his wife doesn't like it, like when his clothes are off on national television. Oh, he's
yeah,
shy.
So he got in trouble with his wife apparently last time they tore his jersey up after a big moment because she wanted to save it or something.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. But no, the shy thing, that's also been another thing that's come out.
Yeah, and then now Carlos Carrera is saying, oh, he had an unfinished tattoo on his collarbone, which is just ridiculous because he had shirtless pictures on Instagram, which took people up 15 seconds probably after the words left Carrera's mouth to find and prove that he was in fact lying.
Yeah, it's
and so
it's ridiculous. It's so
and
bad.
Someone brought,
and
I forget who I heard this from. It was some sort of video, but how do you? Oh, it was. I think it was Christian Yelich actually, or it was another MLB player. Basically said, do you know what I would do if I hit a walk-off home run to send my team to the World Series against Chapman, arguably one of the best, if not the best closer in the recent years
in the game right now?
He was like,
sure.
I don't even care what my teammates do to me. I am on a different level, and he's 100%. How do you not immediately want to? Why is your first thought go change in the dugout?
Yeah, no, it
doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. And this was one of the earlier things that came up was Pete Alonso, who was the rookie who hit, I think it was 52 or 3 home runs to break Aaron Judge's rookie record that had been set like the year previous or 2 years ago for most home runs in a season by a rookie. It showed a picture of him after he hit his record-breaking home run, and he's got his shirt all the way unbuttoned. All of his teammates are hanging off of him. He's got a big smile on his face. His whole bare chest is exposed, and it's like, that's what hitting a walk-off home run, that's what hitting an important home run is like. Not this, yeah, I'm going to go change. And then one last thing I'll bring up here before we kind of try to break out of this.
Yeah, no, we can wrap this up.
There's pictures of not Christian Yelich, jeez. Jose Altuve with an undershirt on under his jersey in the top of the ninth inning or whenever it was before he hit the walk-off. And then between when he was on defense, came off the field and went up to bat, he took off that undershirt too, which is just another little piece of this puzzle that really does point towards the buzzers.
Huh, I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah,
but
I saw that on Twitter.
I could think of more logical excuses for that. I think the celebration thing is what gets me. Like, how is your first thought not to just go wild with your teammate? It doesn't make any sense to me. That being said, are we done? You said you had a question? One question?
One question. And this has been brought up. Oh, actually, I have two more questions. I lied. So to do with the whole cheating thing, both. A lot of people have been saying, and this is particularly, I believe it's been Trevor Bauer has been speaking out a lot on Twitter, basically saying, as much as like this tarnishes baseball, like the whole cheating scandal, it's been really good for the publicity because this is the first time that like there's just all sorts of media coverage. Like every day I go on Twitter and everything I see is baseball. I'll go on my Instagram. A lot of it is baseball stuff because it's all talking about this cheating scandal. But
it's one of those things that's like there's no such thing as like bad press or there's no such thing.
Almost.
As,
yeah. Where it's like.
Yeah.
Exactly. You said that you don't particularly keep up with spring training or anything, but we've all been following this whole cheating scandal because it's been so widely spread. And do you almost think that like backhandedly this is a good thing to get this media coverage? Because it's one thing that Trevor Bauer said was, you know, Steph Curry makes a long three-pointer. You see it on Instagram 20 times. You see it on YouTube. You see it on Twitter. And someone hits like a walk-off home run. Nothing.
Yeah, you might see it on like the team's page or maybe...
Or the MLB page.
Yeah. So I'll answer that two kind of ways. I guess you do bring up a good point. If you're not already a baseball fan or don't pay that much attention to baseball, this kind of gets you invested in it type of thing. But from my personal standpoint, who has followed... Now, I don't follow baseball super closely like a ton of people, to be fair. But I do watch my fair share of games and I keep up with, obviously, what's going on in the league and especially with the Red Sox so that we can do this podcast. For me, it's terrible. It makes the Astros look absolute garbage. And it does make the MLB seem kind of weak.
Yeah, this has been a really bad look for Rob Manfred, who's the commissioner of the league. And one thing with him, this is one little thing I'll sneak in here. He has already warned teams against like intentionally throwing at Astros players, which is the dumbest thing because he hasn't punished the Astros players.
Yeah, if like there's no way they don't get booed everywhere beside Houston. And someone's definitely just wait till the Dodgers play him. It's not going to be pretty, I don't think.
Oh no, it'll be bad. I think it'll be like the Dodgers and the Yankees. It'll spark up some rivalries too,
which will be fun, but yeah. Last question because we need to
last question to get out of baseball. I don't know if you've looked at this too much, the new playoff format which features bringing in more teams as well as giving the top team a first round bye and then the ability to choose their opponent. I don't know if you've really seen or heard about this.
Do you have the full breakdown of the rules?
I don't. I can look it up really quick. If you want to, I was just going to say,
yeah, gut if you look it up really quick, cause I don't, so I've heard about it obviously. And I, that's why I'm asking for the full extent of the rules. Cause I don't completely understand it, but I'm just going to reference one thing I saw on Twitter. Someone was saying how it makes games less important, and I'm wondering how it does. Like, they were saying it makes regular season games kind of less important. I don't know if you saw something.
So, the proposed format would see that the total number of playoff teams in each league increases from 5 to 7, with the wild card round expanding from a one-game playoff to a best-of-three series. A new format could go in as early as 2022 season. Here's how the format would work. The team with the best record in both the American and National League would receive a first-round bye, automatically advancing to the division series. After the other two division winners would host all three games in a best-of-three wild-card round. As with the wild-card team with the next best record, three other wild-card teams would also advance to the best-of-three round, though none would host the game. Division winner with the second-best record in the league would then decide which of the bottom three wild-card teams it wants to play in the opening round, a decision that would be aired on live television on the final Sunday night of the season. Blah, 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 blah.
That seems really complicated.
So basically, the very general gist of it is there's more teams in the playoffs, the best teams get a first-round bye, and to get to the point of how it makes games less important, basically you can just win less games in the season because there's a better chance that you're going to get in. And with this format, I think it's calculated, it's like roughly 47% of teams would make it to the playoffs.
Roughly 40, because 14.
14
out of 32.
30. Out of 30.
There's 30.
Yeah, so almost half.
I can't even keep it straight. Okay. Yeah, so that's like 40.
Gut reaction, or yes or no?
No, probably not. No, definitely not, because part of the playoffs is like, oh, like who are we going to draw as a... Like, oh, like I want the Yankees to lose this game so that we don't have to play them in the first round, or that they get knocked out, or... Like who you play is still kind of a mystery, but now that what am I trying to say? Technology and like analytics play such a big role. I feel like teams are just going to choose the team that they like statistically stack up the best against. So yeah. It's going to create kind of some like not unfair matchups, but it could make for some less interesting games, like some blowouts and stuff, which happens anyway. But no, I say leave it up to don't change it. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Don't change it.
Yeah,
that seems like a lot. Maybe try like baby steps.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up with the same thing. Don't change it. I think it's just ridiculous to let that many teams in. I mean, it's more like more people will care about the playoffs because their team has a better chance of being in. But I agree, it's like there's no point in trying harder because you'll just get in the playoffs. Your team will just get in the playoffs even if they're worse. And I also think the first round bye and then picking your opponents is really dumb. I think the first round bye, like if you had a really strong finish to the season, I forget which team it was. I think it was 2 years ago, finished the season on like a 20 game win streak. I feel like it might've been the Cleveland Indians, but I could be completely wrong in saying this, but they finished the season on an incredible win streak and it gave them a ton of momentum going into like the end of the season. And I think if you just cut that with a first round bye, it's just like, what's
the
point?
Yeah, that's another thing, momentum. All right, we have spent,
far too long
for a sport that really isn't even playing any games yet. But more coming soon. The first spring training game is in a couple of weeks, I believe. Just
exactly 1 week, I believe.
No,
it's it's end of this week. Pardon me.
They play Northeastern on Friday, and then they go into a series, or they play Tampa Bay on Saturday.
Yeah, so if you're a huge baseball
fan, there you go. We will quickly get into the Celtics, and I say quickly because there's not a whole lot to cover here. Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum both playing in the All-Star game last night, which was won by Team Giannis, I think. Nope, Team LeBron. Sorry, didn't even watch the game. That's why I don't know. I'm not going to speak on the game because I didn't watch it. I'll give you some quick stats for those of you who want them. Tatum played 13 minutes with... where is points? Sorry. 6 points, 3 steals, 3 assists, and a rebound. And then Walker played 29 minutes with 23 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. The new format was something, I guess. I don't even know what to say because I don't care.
Yeah, to give some highlights, basically the only things I've really seen is Trae Young hit a half-court shot and Kawhi Leonard won the now Kobe Bryant All-Star MVP award. And that's really it. It was really fun to see these two guys just in kind of their like social media and the Celtics social media posts of them. There was one shot of Jason Tatum, who had the ball matched up against Kemba Walker, and Jason Tatum just had the biggest smile on his face. And it was just funny because that's obviously something you'll never see in the regular season or at any point of Jason Tatum up against his own teammate on defense. But that was a funny thing that came out of it. But other than that, man, I'm with you. I didn't watch it. I don't really care. And I can't speak on the format because I haven't watched the previous All-Star games and I didn't watch this one, but I'm just excited to get back to regular season basketball. It's more interesting. It's more impactful. So we get...
Yeah, since last week, the Celtics dropped a game to the Houston Rockets and then went into the break with a big double overtime win against the LA Clippers. So that's the latest regular season basketball. They are back in action Thursday, I believe.
Friday.
Nope, Friday, sorry. Other teams are back in action Thursday. Celtics are back in action Friday at the Minnesota Timberwolves. Did you watch the Skills Challenge by chance? You definitely didn't.
No,
I didn't either.
Chance.
I feel like I would have seen something if Tatum...
I guess Tatum won.
Tatum was supposed to defend his title in the skills challenge, apparently. And I don't think that happened as I quickly look it up. 2020 skills challenge. This is just an article. Bam, winner Bam Adebayo.
From the Miami Heat. He's been all the talk recently.
So congratulations to him. Congratulations to Team LeBron, I guess. What's cool is they donated a bunch of money to charities based on who won what quarters type of thing. That's a really cool implementation, I think, to know you kind of give back and whatnot. Lord knows the NBA can afford it, and most major sporting leagues can.
Oh boy, this is taking a turn.
I just get real political all of a sudden.
Yeah, what I was going to say is, I think that's like, to kind of, to sum it up, this All-Star game was viewed as like a lot more competitive because it was the first to get to a certain score, and then they had these incentives in the middle of like who won each quarter you donate to that charity. So I believe it was one team donated $300,000 to charity because they won three out of the four quarters, the other team donating $100,000. And I think the way to kind of meet in the middle, because there's a lot of people that are like, okay, this was a fun one-year thing, now change it back. And then there's people way more competitive, way more fun to watch, whatever. I think the way to kind of get in the middle of this is put it back to just whoever has the most points after four quarters of play wins the game. That's whatever. But I think if you keep this, whoever wins the quarter, donate to charity, it's a really good just PR and general thing to do, donating to charity. Like you said, as much as it was a very political thing, the players in the league can afford it, but it's also just a good move overall that it adds a little bit of that competitive flavor because it's whoever wins that quarter, but it's not that crazy like, oh, the first person to get to this score, which was really a really strange thing. I know it was done to honor Kobe Bryant, but other than that,
I think... It was kind of like they brought this out of nowhere, but yeah, I think it's finding some happy medium to kind of keep it somewhat competitive, but also to give back is a good balance, I guess. That being said, before we flip it to the other half of the TD Garden, we will have a quick word from our sponsor. And now getting into the Boston Bruins, who just continue to play some incredible hockey, let me tell you. I watched 2/3 of the game yesterday, where they ended up winning 3-1? 4-1?
3-1.
3-1.
I'm guessing the 2/3 you watched were the first two.
Yes, very good. Currently on a 3-game win streak, most recently yesterday beating the Detroit Red Wings, right? No, the Rangers. The Rangers. Sorry, yep. It was Hockey Day of America or something. They beat the Red Wings earlier in the week, or late last week, I guess, getting kind of some redemption, or Saturday. I don't even know what day it is anymore. Saturday, getting some kind of redemption from the disappointing loss last weekend. The Bruins still have a handle on the NHL, leading the league with 86 points. Tampa Bay, who is apparently on a real hot streak, the announcers were saying yesterday, close behind with 83. Do you want to update us on our league leader in goals, James?
Our league leader in goals is once again now tied between David Pastrnak and Austin Matthews of the Toronto Maple Leafs, both of them sitting at 42 goals. But if you flash back to last week when we said that David Pastrnak had fallen behind in the goal race, he made up ground real quick, scoring a nice hat trick against the Montreal Canadiens on Wednesday night and getting himself right back on top like nothing had ever happened. And to quickly kind of bounce back to that win streak that the Bruins have been on, though they're currently only on a 3-game win streak, they have won 9 of their last 10 games, so really doing very, very well. And that goes all the way back to the middle of January when that win streak kind of started up with, like you said, the unfortunate loss to the Red Wings a week ago. But this Bruins team, so much fun to watch. This is, ever since last year, them really heating up has kept me so intrigued with hockey. It's such a fun team to watch, to keep up with. And I'm just really excited kind of coming down the stretch here. This is grind time where you kind of separate out who's gonna be heading to those playoffs, who you're gonna kind of be matched up against. We're gonna find that out relatively soon, but the Bruins just got to finish strong, and it's crazy that now we have Tampa Bay right behind us because I believe they're on a crazy long win streak. I'll quickly look that up if you just kind of want to put in some other thoughts, if you have any, about the Bruins and how they've been doing recently.
Yeah, I was just looking. There's about 21 or 22 games left. I kind of lost count right at the end there. So yeah, like you said, getting down to crunch time, I'm really not concerned. I'm pretty confident the Bruins will finish, if not the top of the league, top three for sure. Just the way they are playing and the level they're consistently able to play at every night, especially on games where it's back-to-back. They're playing a back-to-back basically every weekend. And so I can't even imagine the stress that puts on your body. Like, literally, there was 24 hours between their game, and I just accidentally turned on Siri on my computer. I apologize. I don't know if you guys even heard that. But they're literally playing games back-to-back almost within 24 hours of each other. So flashback 1 week ago, they played 3 p.m. on Saturday and then 12:30 on Sunday. So 21 hours there. And then here they're playing 1 p.m. on Saturday and 3:30 p.m. on Sunday. So 26 hours there.
And that's just from beginning face-off to beginning face-off. That's not even factoring in the three-hour game that ensues afterwards, too.
Yeah, exactly. The game, the travel, the, you know, the rehab that all those guys go through at the end of each game, getting treatment, whatever it is. So the ability, that is not what I meant to say. The fact that they are able to play at this level with such, I don't want to say grueling, because they do have some decent midweek time off, but with a tough, you know, back-to-back schedule type thing is very impressive.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, the time frame, I mean, you talk about they're playing the same amount of games as basketball players, and each sport is, you know, very demanding in its own way, but to play on like back-to-back nights, it's just insane the wear and tear that these guys go through, and then they wake up the next day and do it all over again. They do have some time off in like 1 or 2 day stretches, but I think about what they must go through, and giving me 1 to 2 days, granted I'm not a professional hockey player, giving me 1 to 2 days to recover would do nothing. It literally wouldn't do anything. So the fact that these guys can do it day in and day out for months on end is just absolutely incredible.
Do you have the update on the Lightning win streak?
Yes, I do. They're currently on a 10 game win streak. So
okay. 10 like regular what am I trying to say? Regular time, no OT or overtime, or
it just said win streak 10.
10 games. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, we will transition out of the Bruins, who I guess we can take a quick look, play on Wednesday night, Friday night, and Saturday night of this week, playing the Oilers, the Flames, and the Canucks. So a nice little Canadian road trip there.
Nice little West Coast.
Boston Bruins.
Calgary again at home on the 25th. So they got quite the string of Canadian teams here, four in a row.
I've been trying to like look at tickets, but they're just ridiculously expensive for a broke college student. We will get into the Patriots now, and I'm gonna pretty much let you guide this conversation because I've been very adamant that I don't want to talk about it. So go ahead.
All right. We are living, just to start off, we are living in the land of hypotheticals this episode with the Patriots. We're going to start off with the most factual thing, and even that's speculative. New reports are saying that Brady is likely to come back to the Patriots, basically saying, if you guys have more weapons on offense, yeah, I'm back and I'm down to keep doing this. So I think this, as it stands, is the most likely option for Tom Brady and also just the New England Patriots, where we pretty much plan on having him come back. And the weapons thing is just something they should do anyways. Looking at how last season went and where we fell through was the offensive weapons, the wide receivers. We didn't have a lot. So I took the liberty of compiling kind of a list of who you think we should sign. If you've had time to look through those, I listed just some top tight end and wide receivers that are free agents in the league. Not even going to talk about draft because I don't follow college football enough. You don't follow college football enough to really have intelligent discussion about who we should draft or anything. We will leave that for way, 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 way in the future when experts have done their research. But for now, if you had enough time with me stalling basically here, to look at the, we'll start off with the wide receivers because that's the first link I have in here.
Who do you think
just looking through a couple of good targets that you think you'd either like how they fit in, or it does have the AAV listed there, the average annual value of their salary, that you think would fit in on this Patriots team?
Okay, and for those of you that are constant listeners, you know I am not the football guy in this podcast, but I think this is pretty accurate when I say it was very obvious that we had good skilled players as receivers, kind of thing. Like, I get that, you know, N'Keal Harry's a rookie, and we lost a lot of weapons in Gronk, a lot of weapons, one huge weapon in Gronk.
I think he counts as multiple, but
yeah, I think so too. But I think it's fair to say that there was a decent amount of talent in and skill in our receiving pool. Is that fair to say?
Receiving core.
That's what they call it. The word. Okay. Yep. That.
I do think you're right. Looking at, like you said, N'Keal Harry.
So I think the biggest thing is familiarity with Tom Brady. That's what he wants. He doesn't necessarily want the most skilled player, because you saw we gave him, Antonio Brown for one game, and N'Keal Harry, who is going to looks to be like he could be a very skilled player in the coming years, but they don't. They're brand new guys to him, type of thing. So looking at the list, the biggest name that jumps out here is Danny. Wow, I just butchered that one.
Just start
Danny Amendola. You know, there's kind of been some speculation that he would come back to the Patriots, and it just makes sense. Brady knows him. He knows Brady. He knows the Patriots system, and he was one of those guys that just by being on a team with Tom Brady, I think Brady made him that much better. That being said, there are some other pretty big names in this list. AJ Green, Emmanuel Sanders, Amari Cooper, all in the top five here. Not that these are in any particular, I think they're in salary order, it looks like.
Yeah.
But it's, again, I think it's, he needs to be, they need to be more than just a skilled player type of thing. It takes time for a quarterback and a wide receiver to get to that level of comfort that like a Julian Edelman had, a Randy Moss had, that type of thing. And granted, they're both very talented players. Am I wrong in saying that there was some kind of AJ Green rumors that the Patriots were looking at him, or am I making that up?
I don't know that there were rumors as much as it was like, oh, this is why New England would be a good landing place for him, but I don't think it was anything like, oh, there have actually been talks or anything. And to kind of follow up to what you said, I think you're completely right in saying it was much more of an issue with familiarity than it was with just sheer skill, because you do look at who we have, and N'Keal Harry looks to be a very promising prospect kind of coming up here. And looked great in his first games with the Patriots. Philip Dorsett kind of stepped up a little bit this season. Looked to be a more of a front runner in this offense. Kind of fell off a little bit towards the end of the season, mostly just not being targeted as much. But if you think about who did the receiving for this team, it really, at the end of the day, just seemed like it was just Julian Edelman, who's been the only guy who's really been there for any real length of time. So when you bring up the reunion of Danny Amendola, I'd be a big fan of that move. I don't love the idea of going out and getting someone as big as Amari Cooper or AJ Green, just because it's a bunch of money to be paying. And it's also someone that they just take away from. You look at Julian Edelman, and he is one of the best receivers that's been on this Patriots team. But if you stack him up against an AJ Green and Emmanuel Sanders, and then even looking at, you know, Julio Jones, Mike Evans, some of the best names in the game right now, he doesn't compare to them. He just doesn't, you know, size-wise and also stats-wise, but I think that's the beauty of it. It's all these guys that can play a really important role, and that's, you know, Danny Amendola with his time in New England. You know, he wasn't like a league-leading receiver or anything, but he was a good player, and he was, you know, Brady was familiar with him, trusted him, and that's what made him so great. So I do believe in bringing in maybe some not as talked about guys where you look at, I think a big thing they do have listed here, Philip Dorsett, as he is a free agent this season. I would like to see him come back. And I just think, you know, an Amendola reunion would look great. And then maybe go out and try to get like one bigger name receiver.
Get another weapon. And we can kind of switch over to tight ends as well if you want. Because that's another weapon that obviously you can't replace Gronk. And we just basically covered that. But that is somewhere it was clear we were lacking. We didn't have... do we have a consistent tight end this year? I feel like I heard a couple different names.
Not
but
really.
They rarely got targeted.
It was supposed to be Ryan Izzo. He was out with injury. It was supposed to be Benjamin Watson. He missed four games and then was in and out. He's also 37 or 38 years old, so he's pretty up there in age. And then we kind of had Matt Lacoste and a couple other guys who it was just... It wasn't consistent, and the tight end position really hasn't been what it was without Gronk.
Yeah, so I think definitely adding a weapon there. I don't think that's where you put your money, though. I think you put your money into another receiver. Like you said there, get a different look than a Julian. Go out and get some guy that's 6'4 and can run a 4.2 40. I don't even know if that's a thing. That sounds
I
really
don't
fast.
Think you described a physical human being that exists, but
yeah, okay, you know what I'm starting to say. Go out and get that guy that when you think, like, when you picture football wide receiver in your head, that's the guy who, like, pops up in your head. Go get that guy, and that I think that will balance out nicely with Julian Edelman. Is kind of your he's much smaller than a typical receiver, but boy does he work his butt off. And so I think just kind of a different look, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and like you said,
I'm very unsure of myself today. You can't see me, obviously, but I keep like weighing my hands back and forth.
Okay, bouncing over to the tight ends. I'm just going to go a couple of guys here that stand out to me. Greg Olsen is one where you kind of get into this line of, you know, he has the experience in the league. Very, very, done very well for himself in Carolina. He is up there in age at 35 and has really been dealing with some injuries in the last years, but could be a good guy to land who you have to trust him on the basis of he's proven himself. Also the most expensive free agent.
Yeah, I literally was like,
here.
Don't spend your money on a tight end. And James is like, how about the most paid one here?
Well, these are two that you wouldn't have come up with. Two that I think are a little bit better options.
Any other tight end?
Hunter Henry from the Los Angeles Chargers. That team looks like it's kind of going into rebuild mode. So he's a free agent due for a bigger paycheck. He was paid $1.5, right, and about $1.6 million last year. So
I love how all of these are round numbers and his is just 1.6. It was $1,595,077.
Yeah, it's weird. But
and the rest of these are all just round on the thousand.
I think he's a really, really great player. Once again, he dealt with some injuries in the last couple of years, but he's 25 years old and he's shown that he's got what it takes. And he's a guy that if you get him, you know, a year or two with Brady and what Brady has left for time, I think he could be a really great player. And then this is one I saw this morning on a Nesson article that I actually really liked the writing behind it, and I think the logic too. Austin Hooper, tight end for the Atlanta Falcons. Once again, 25 years old. Had a really big season in Atlanta. 75 receptions, 787 yards, 6 touchdowns. He got paid $803,000 last year, so he's not a big hit to your payroll. You can afford to pay him a bit more. But he's one of those guys where he's young enough, so if you give him a year or two with Brady, he could be your guy. And we're always going to refer back to the whole Gronk. Those are shoes that you cannot fill. You just have to accept that. You can't fill the shoes of Gronk, and eventually we're going to get to this discussion a little bit later on. You can't fill the shoes of Brady either. But in terms of supplementing that and trying to bring in some talent, I do think Austin Hooper's a really great option.
I don't know a whole lot. Austin Hooper did have he's up there. He's second most touchdowns for this list of tight ends you hear with 6 last year. 75 receptions for 787 yards. That's an average of 10.5 yards per carry. So
per
I think you're right. If you get him in yards per catch, sorry.
Reception, whatever you
reception.
Want to call it.
Continue. I don't know. Yeah. I think you're right. You give this guy a little bit of time to develop whatnot. Again, we're not really sure how much time Brady has left, and he's not going to tell anyone until he's ready to retire, I guess. That took me like a minute to get out because I didn't want to say it. Yeah, I don't really have anything else to add because I don't know a whole lot of tight ends.
Okay.
It doesn't matter because we're drafting Randy Moss's son or whatever.
Thaddeus Moss coming to the Patriots. We're going to bounce. One more time. What pick?
What pick, yeah.
Oh, I have no clue. I don't know enough. He's definitely not a first rounder. Anyways,
anywho, we will shift
as we spoke about not knowing enough about the draft.
To immediately
anyways,
the draft.
like you mentioned before, and I mentioned before, basically, this is very hypothetical, and this is contingency planning, just planning for the worst possible thing that could happen. Are there any current free agent QBs that you think the Patriots should bring in if a Brady return doesn't occur? And I'm going to start off by just saying, like I said, you can't fill the shoes of Tom Brady. That just isn't possible. A quarterback of his caliber does not exist and has not existed in the league the entire time that it's been around because he is the greatest. But do you think, is there anyone on this list of free agents that you think you'll even like the looks of or the sound of maybe coming to New England?
It's so hard. I physically can't picture Tom Brady on another team. So, like, that doesn't help.
No, not at all.
And this is worst case scenario. Personally, and this has nothing, like, obviously I'm a huge Patriots fan and I don't want him to play anywhere else. I physically, like, if you're an outsider, there's no way you can see him playing anywhere else either, right? Like, it just doesn't make sense. Like,
everyone wants him to leave so the dynasty can be over, but yeah, it doesn't make...
No.
Make any sense.
I don't have, like, a particular guy in mind, but I think if Brady leaves, I think you go with someone young. You take the risk on a young guy that has a lot of upside potential. Maybe we don't win the Super Bowl the next two out of the 3 years. Maybe we only make the playoffs, you know, two of those years. But I think you take a chance on a young guy, and then in three, four, five years when they do develop, we're right back in that dynasty mode type of thing. That's what I would do personally, and I don't know enough about the young quarterbacks in the league and, you know, who's going to come along in the next couple of years of the draft. But that would be my outlook on it. So well, I don't have anyone in mind.
What's unfortunate about what you just described is there's one player here that actually does fit that exact description.
Can I guess?
Go for
it. Oh, is it? It's one of two people. It's either Bridgewater or Winston. Is who you're thinking of, right?
Yes.
You're thinking of Jameis Winston, aren't you?
Oh, of course I'm thinking of Jameis Winston. I mean, you look at it. 5,000 passing yards, 33 passing touchdowns.
30 interceptions.
30 interceptions, not great. And one LASIK eye surgery. But kind of reeling it back, what I was going to say is my pick here has to be Teddy Bridgewater. He's young enough. He's 28 years old. Yeah,
He's not the young guy. I was literally thinking like 24, 25, 26, and Jameis is 26. Bridgewater, 28. I think you just said that. I was thinking a little younger personally, but yeah, Bridgewater does, I don't want to say make sense because nothing besides Tom Brady makes sense, but he is a guy that kind of fits the description I just described.
Yeah, and what I was going to say is he proved himself in New Orleans this year. You know, you look at Drew Brees was out for, I believe it was 5 games. He started all 5 of those, and I think they won.
I think he was 5-0, yeah.
All 5 of them? And he looked really good. It was, you know, a bummer when he went down with an injury in Minnesota that kind of bounced his career to New Orleans as a backup, got his time to shine, and it's really a question of if New Orleans is going to pay him because there's the big Drew Brees. Either he's basically where Drew Brees stands is he's coming back to New Orleans or he's retiring and no one really knows where he's at. I mean, Drew Brees a generational talent up there with some of the bigger names in the game right now, but I think Bridgewater, he's a guy where if you can even find a way to bring Brady back and then get Bridgewater, you know, backing up Brady, get a couple years of that experience.
I don't know if that's realistic.
And I don't think it is realistic, but it's one of those things where if Brady's got a couple years left in him, you want whoever you decide is going to be your next guy behind him. Because we had Garoppolo and eventually, you know, Belichick decided that Garoppolo wasn't the guy. And I guess that kind of turned out and he kind of proved that in the Super Bowl. Not being the guy that is.
No, I think trading with Garoppolo was a pretty big mistake personally. It's very clear that he is going to be one of the more elite quarterbacks in the league for the coming years. You know, Super Bowl thing aside, but
I don't know. We can have this discussion in another episode because I don't completely agree with that.
Okay. All right. Well,
I'd rather have Jimmy Garoppolo than Jarrett Stidham sitting behind Tom Brady, and you know, Garoppolo's been there for a number of years. But I think the idea is if you can bring back Brady, whoever sits behind him, you got to be pretty sure that's your next guy.
Yeah.
Because you can't even two years of backing up Tom Brady, that experience is so worth something that I think you have to be pretty sure with who you put behind him.
I think obviously the most ideal situation is Tom Brady re-signs, plays for another couple of years, you keep Stidham under him and hope that Stidham is that guy with the huge upside potential. He's, I don't know how old, he's got to be like, what, 23, 24?
Yeah, he's like 24.
Maybe younger.
It's okay. Not like the NBA, though. It's not like a lot of guys who come out of like first year college and then go right into the NFL.
Yeah,
like,
they're usually 23, 24. Usually. I can't even think of a world. I'm just going to keep on saying it. We actually avoided this conversation for a long time.
Yeah, we're really running out
of stuff.
I'm
going to say, I guess the Patriots season didn't end that long ago.
Early January.
You know, everyone else was right on it. So that being said, do you want to move into kind of our last thing? We mentioned it earlier.
We briefly mentioned this human being. Yes, Jameis Winston got some eye surgery, got the LASIK to fix his... Apparently it was a sight issue that was making him lob all those interceptions. I definitely can't put this in the podcast, so I won't read what I wrote there. But anyways, so hopefully...
Oh, I didn't even read that.
...brings down the number of interceptions. I don't know. I think it'd be funnier if he somehow threw more. I heard someone say he should go 40 for 40 next season, and I'm all for it. Yeah. I think that'd be incredible. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, first of all, how'd you go this long without dealing with that? That seems really, really foolish. But also, one of those things where it's like, is this just something you do to, like, he's obviously a free agent now. Is this something you do to just kind of, like, make your free agency look better to make it, like, instead of training extra hard this offseason, he's like, oh, I got my eyes fixed. And that's
like, guys, like, don't worry,
stock.
The problem's like, fixed.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah, I don't know. But what if he comes out and he throws 33... What do you throw? 33 touchdowns this year?
Yeah.
What if he throws those... What if he throws 33 again with 10 interceptions?
But is that like a standout season, though? I mean, I'm looking here. Tom Brady threw...
24.
To 24. Okay, so I'm trying to look for someone who threw like 30.
Brees threw 27. What did Mahomes throw?
Oh, I'm sure Mahomes was like...
Oh, he's not on that list, though, because he's not 40s. A free agent.
But, is a 30 touchdown, you know, 10 interception seasons only impressive for Jameis Winston because that's shaving off 20 interceptions
from
the last season?
Well, no, my point there wasn't like, oh, like, look how good a season he's having. Is like, oh, look, like, the LASIK actually might have done something.
Yeah, but I think...
Or he just got better decision-making.
Yeah, I think the bigger thing lies in, like, the decision-making. I think it's a lot more about...
You know, you can speculate that, like, under the right coaching staff and organization, you can kind of, like, weed that out, but not a guy I personally want in the Patriots.
No, you can't exactly coach his off-field actions out of him either, so...
No.
Anyways, that's really unfortunate because that's the last thing I have written here. Is that how we end this show today? Is that really what it comes down to? All right. Anyways, thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. That will do it for us. Make sure to leave a rating on whatever podcasting platform you listen on. We truly appreciate it. Kind of let us know what we're doing well, what we could do better upon. It's been a crazy couple of weeks here with sports. Baseball, despite not even being in season, has become like the most talked about thing on this podcast, making a rebound from us scraping together like a half a second of a Snapchat of Chris Sale walking down a tunnel at spring training. I don't even know what we came up with for baseball news before. So make sure to leave us a rating. Leave us recommendations, comments, 5 stars, hopefully. Also, it's been recent... Let a friend know about our podcast. If you think you have someone you know who'd enjoy whatever this is, be sure to let them know about it. You know, we love getting this show out to more people and hopefully just kind of spreading the discussion of Boston sports because it's so much fun to talk about. And as we talk about every week, we have some really good teams on our hands this season. So it's a lot of fun to talk about. So make sure to keep up with that. I will let you take care of the social medias because I've been talking for far too long.
All right. If you want to keep up with us outside of the podcast, our Instagram is Brady Bros Boston. Our YouTube is Brady Bros. Got some vlogs going up on there. You guys should watch that. It's tough being away from each other. So it's kind of like a once a week type of thing almost. But that's going to be a big thing in the future. So you should check it out. My Twitter is Brady Bros Nick. James's Twitter is James B_Boston. That has been episode 46 of the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you in the next one. See ya!